this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. And we start on the front page with the cover story headline, Startups Unplugged, Their Stories of Survival and Success. And that's the headline on the front page. The cover story begins inside Triangle Business Journal with another headline, Breeding Startups to Change the World. And this article is written by Lauren K. Onasorge. A slide, vending machines full of Slim Jims and shareable scooters. They're what some people think of when they think of American Underground, or AU, the Capital Broadcasting-owned entrepreneurship co-working initiative. Spread across three campuses in the Triangle, a fourth in downtown Raleigh houses an extension of Code School Iron Yard Academy. 250 companies are trying to survive in the cutthroat world of entrepreneurship. Divided between nearly 150 offices and two co-working spaces, they're a diverse group, many of whom will stop at nothing to succeed. They'll forego paychecks, work odd hours, and fly across the country to beg at the heels of Sand Hill Road investors, all to stay alive in a world where failure is part of the day-to-day story. The initiative is the vision of the Goodman family, which broadened their scope from broadcasting to real estate decades ago. We recognized that there were these younger, high-growth companies that really didn't fit a traditional real estate model, says Michael Goodman, Capital's vice president of real estate. And 6 years ago, his family just happened to have a spare basement in what used to be a tobacco warehouse in downtown Durham. He admits it started as a ready, fire, aim kind of thing. We had nothing to lose, he says, but he didn't expect the community that would form. It's very, very real, Goodman says, pointing to companies such as Windsor Circle, a marketing technology firm and graduate of AU that scored the first Google Demo Day victory in Silicon Valley. But with success comes another problem. As companies outgrow their co-working desks, there are only so many office spaces that can accommodate their innovation in downtown Durham, and even fewer with the flexible lease terms that AU can provide. While Goodman says Capital is exploring its options in downtown Durham, the pipeline is already starting to outgrow what's available, as companies, regardless of whether success is branded into their future, keep flocking to the AU. Here's a sampling of the tenants at AU, the opportunities and challenges they face as they work to live the American dream. First, we have Helium Core. Tucked into a street-level office at Durham's At Main campus, Brandon Ho is used to working alone as he tries to push his product, the Helium Core, to news organizations across the globe. It's basically a case for the iPhone that lets you attach a lens to it, he explains. It's a simple concept, but it turns an iPhone into a piece of complicated videography equipment, more nimble than the bulky camera bags full of equipment that video journalists often arm themselves with today. Ho, who worked in product management and Lenovo before leaving in November of 2009 to start his own marketing company, says he was trying to solve a problem when he invented the Core. When traveling, he used to lug cases of heavy equipment and would then just end up using the iPhone to shoot everything. But the iPhone had limitations for which Ho, who calls photography his first passion, was just unwilling to settle. That's where the Helium Core comes in, with its advanced lens and bonded technology that's designed for easier video transmission, ideal, it seems, for journalists. So far, his customer base is small, a handful of sales to a college in Georgia, and Kickstarter early adopters, but things are starting to move quickly. And it's because of his new digs at American Underground. Ho says he was working out of a studio in downtown Durham before the energy of AU attracted him to At Main. And in his first few weeks of AU residency, Ho made an introduction that would change his company. An engineering manager at Kickstarter, who also happened to be working in the space, that conversation led to a collaboration on his Kickstarter video, which, as of June 1, had already netted $10,131 past the stretch goal. Those kinds of connections happen here, he says. It was very unusual. I never expected to meet someone like that here. As he pushes out his devices, expected to retail at about $150, the 41-year-old Ho isn't finding an easy path. I wouldn't say they're sacrifices. I would term them investments, he laughs, describing the late nights he spends doing busy work, minor office tasks that, had he the resources, he'd gladly farm out to someone else so that he could spend more time with his wife and his 8-month-old baby. But like the other entrepreneurs milling in and out of the glass-walled halls, Ho says he wouldn't have it any other way. Personas, spelled P-R-S-O-N-A-S, started as a spin-off of a marketing firm based on technology built by former Black Ops contractor Chuck Rinker. Initially, it was just Rinker and his co-founder David Rose developing digital mannequins and the software powering them from a tiny office in American Underground's At Main campus in Durham. The mannequins, like 2D silhouettes, interact with people at events and in corporate lobbies, directing them to fill out surveys and acting as attention-seeking novelties. Over the past several months, the market for the mannequins, which are armed with artificial intelligence technology, has expanded. The company is starting to make money, meaning that at long last, both Rinker and Rose are taking salaries for their efforts. Verified. It started late last year. Danvers Flurry, chairman of Verified, an advertising technology firm targeting universities and other educational institutions, came to American Underground to spin out a new company, Talented. Talented is basically a phone app aimed at helping people master new skills, he says. If you go to a leadership workshop, he adds, Talented can help you retain what you've learned. And from AU, Flurry was seeking what he calls accelerated serendipity. He says he found it in spades in the walls of At Main. When you're here, you bump into all sorts of different people, he says. You get all kinds of different ideas. 3 months into product development, he was having a conversation with a coworker when another entrepreneur overheard and, through a family member, was able to connect him to a Fortune 200 buyer. We're under NDA with them right now, he says, calling AU the best investment he's made yet. It wouldn't have happened anywhere else. SoloPro. Tommy Sowers, CEO of SoloPro, is quietly raising money from his American Underground office suite. Months after releasing the first television commercial for his technology firm, which aims to eliminate some of the fees associated with buying a house, his firm has seen 450 transactions in 20 states, and it's growing, Sowers says. What's been surprising is what happened when we stopped advertising, he says, adding that word of mouth and social media have proven to be effective grassroots tactics. It's been like a virus spreading. It's happening quicker than Sowers, a former Green Beret, had expected. Starting a business is crazy until you're around a bunch of crazies, and then it seems normal, Sowers jokes. AU, he says, is why he decided to split SoloPro's headquarters between California and Durham, and not just California. 14, including part-timers, work out of his space now. And it's cramped quarters, which is why he's leaving AU in the fall for an office at American Tobacco campus. AU, however, is why he specifically looked for space in downtown Durham. It sold me on the culture of downtown Durham, he says. We're lucky. We found something. But not everyone is so lucky, Sowers says. It's hard out there. Trestles. Rebecca Horton's consulting firm, Trestles was in a shared studio street on Foster Street for 6 months before moving into American Underground. The four-person company says it wasn't an economic decision. We could probably rent space out in the Triangle for cheaper, she says. It's the collaborative work environment. Here, there's a workshop space and rooms for meetings, she adds. Horton came out of a project she was doing while getting her master's degree in design management. I was just one of those crazy people who just tried something, she says. And she tried a lot of somethings while in D.C., running 8 different pilots of service offerings before returning to her home state of North Carolina. I just wanted a change of pace, Horton says. I wanted my life to not just be about my business. She's not a startup in the sense that she's inventing something completely new. She doesn't have brand new software she's hawking or a new Kickstarter-funded consumer device. Unlike most of her AU peers, she does it through workshops, project-based consultation, and coaching, where we essentially work alongside a company, she says. MIT, for example, hired Horton's firm last year to help it examine its international student experience. "We came in like an investigator," she says. While she has coached her peer companies in the AU, it's not really her prime audience. "We're more focused on working with enterprise clients," she says. But AU has helped her team keep up its creativity. Take the lunches she enjoys with the folks at AU based Story Driven, a marketing firm that specializes in documentary style marketing. "We go have lunch and trade ideas over a meal," she says. NeuroPlus. Jake Stotch is among American Underground's oldest tenants, having started at Duke University procured space while still developing what would become NeuroPlus. Stotch, who, after securing a $5,000 entrepreneurship grant, went all in, dropping out of Duke University, has firsthand experience with AU's big flaw. "Once you get over 10 people, where do you go?" he says. "Space in the larger suites at AU is limited," he points out. Stotch, who has developed a device that measures brain waves, isn't big enough or stable enough for a traditional office lease, he says. The technology, initially used to measure how people responded to advertisements, has evolved into a game aimed at helping people focus. In one instance, a dragon flies faster when you sit still, focusing on the screen. The idea came as he was presenting the original marketing idea. Investors and customers alike kept asking, "Can I get one of these to see if my kids are actually paying attention to their homework?" A clinical trial testing how the game helps children with attention deficit disorders is supposed to yield results this summer. If all goes well, Stotch could be readying for a major growth tick. But he's not willing to bet all that on a large office space, even as he outgrows the at-Maine campus. He got lucky. His fiancée, Tatiana Bergeson, founder of another AU company, Maddie Energy, was also looking for space. Neither are quite big enough for a newly vacated suite at AU's ATC campus, so they're combining offices to make it work. But continued growth could prove challenging, he says. "It's a threat and an opportunity," Stotch says. "AU is going to be the only game in town, and there isn't room for everyone." Bull House. Serial marketer Dan Moore, former chief marketing officer of Durham's The Redwoods Group, doesn't fit what some might think to be the American Underground profile. Moore, who just opened what he calls an American Underground for creative professionals, is slightly older, with a graying beard. He's using his equity proceeds from the sale of Redwoods Group to start what he's calling Bull House. It's a super early stage project, officially opening in May 2016 at the new Ad Market space in downtown Durham. Moore calls Bull House a STEAM collective instead of just STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. He's adding an A for arts, a moniker that incorporates designers, photographers, videographers, interior designers, the creative classes, he explains. The concept is to provide the right talent to the right needs at the right dosage, Moore says. 7 members are already paying his firm about $325 per month to freelance out of one of the 9 desks he's assembled so far in his AU space. The plan is to have that sum more than pay for itself, as entrepreneurs in his collective will be making pitches for group projects with unnamed partners. "It's the American Underground for the creative class," Moore says, explaining that over the years, AU has become a standalone descriptor. There's really nothing like it. And that means that he's willing to pay the premium. While he had considered a standalone space for his startup, the real estate aspect of AU, which provides everything from furniture to Wi-Fi, as well as the reputation, sold him on At Market. And he thinks it will sell his members as well, because while theoretically they could pony up cash for their own co-working desk at Maine, Bull House curates peers for them, he says. And despite the waiting list often cited by AU officials, it is a curated group of companies. Not everyone can join, even if they have the cash. Klein and Goodman have said they're looking for like-minded companies with high growth potential, not just freelancers looking for desks. This opens access, Moore says. And along with this article, there's a section called American Underground by the Numbers. 29.4% of American Underground companies are female-led. 22.4% of American underground companies are minority-led. 250-plus companies are housed within American Underground's four locations. $29,846,000. Total funding raised by American Underground-based companies. 83% of the companies in American Underground who sought funding received it. 50,688 cups of locally roasted coffee brewed in the American Underground. And 9,159 slices of pizza consumed at HelpFest, an entrepreneurial networking event. And as we continue in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the small business section for a question and answer column. The headline, Build Health Startups to Improve Lives. Rex Health Ventures focuses on technology that benefits doctors' work. And this article is written by Jason DeBruin. By any measure, Rex Health Ventures, the investment group tied to UNC Rex Healthcare, has performed well. One of its first investments was in Aerial Biopharma, a Morrisville sleep drug developer that was acquired in a deal that could be valued at $400 million. To be sure, RHV invested relatively late, so its payout won't be as high as some early investors, but it's still nice to get a win on the board for an investment group that was founded in 2012. Other local investments include Arrivo BioVentures, Babies, Midnight Pharma, Phononic, and Target Pharma Solutions. Bobby Helmedig and Anita Watkins sat with Triangle Business Journal to discuss the progress of the venture group and what they are looking for when it comes to investment pitches. From a very high perspective, what is your investment strategy and what are your goals for RHV investments? Rex Health Venture seeks to invest in companies focused on building innovative healthcare solutions that are strategically relevant to a community hospital. In addition to the investment, we offer our portfolio companies a strong partnership that provides strategic insight and access to clinical expertise. We are actively making minority investments in companies that span a broad section of healthcare applicable to the community hospital setting. The fund partners with businesses to find solutions that improve quality of care, reduce costs, and increase access. We typically look for companies that are ready to pilot or operationalize their offerings within the hospital setting. What is the vetting process? After we do an initial valuation of a company's business plan, financials, and management team, we rely on the expertise of hospital clinicians and coworkers to evaluate the company's offering based on the ability to fit in with the current workflow, offer a solution to an existing pain point, improve patient outcomes, or reduce costs. How many pitches do you see in a month? How many get initial consideration? How many get further consideration? How many ultimately receive funding? On average, we receive between 30 to 50 contacts or requests per month. Of those, about half are in areas we would consider for investment. Usually, the investment team will take a first look and have a call with the management team for about 10. Between 3 and 5 opportunities will be sent around to our clinicians and coworkers for their input. We average 2 new investments per year. The final decisions are approved by the Rex Health Ventures Board. What's the hardest funding decision you've had to make to date? We face difficult funding decisions every week. Often we will review companies that solve a real need or improve patient care, but for some reason do not fit our investment profile. We regularly end up turning down some very good companies. What is the best way for a startup to get your attention? Hands down, the easiest way to get attention is to get introduced through a contact that knows us well. That could be from organizations such as CED or the North Carolina Biotech Center, other investors we know, or through our portfolio companies. What is your secret talent? Our secret talent is our coworkers, the clinicians and other healthcare experts we work with every day who help us make good funding decisions. If you could have dinner with any 3 people, who would you choose? Bobby chooses Father Ted Hesburgh, Winston Churchill, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. Anita chooses Gandhi, Amelia Earhart, and J.R.R. Tolkien. Do you have any interesting hobbies, Bobby? When I'm not out running around with my three kids, which isn't very often, I like to work on cars. In high school, I took automotive technology class and liked getting my hands dirty. My stress relief. Anita, anything outdoors, hiking, camping, running, swimming, and birding. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by digital producer Mark DeRoberts. The first headline, amid scores of local leaders, First Tee, Liggett exec win big. From Paragon Bank CEO Bob Hatley to North State Bank CEO Larry Barber, and from Deloitte's J.R. Sharon to soon-to-be-retiring State Senator Neil Hunt, more than 100 local leaders were gathered at the old Chatham Golf Club to support the First Tee of the Triangle's annual charity golf event on May 31. According to tournament organizers, the tourney raised $110,000 that will go directly to the First Tee Life Skills Experience Program for kids in the local community. Biz heard Hunt put it very succinctly, "Glad to see that at the end of the round, someone benefited from our participation because it probably did not help anyone's golf game." While the First Tee kids will feel good about the support, there was one other person who may soon have some new friends, Nick Anson, Vice President of Financial Planning and Treasury at Liggett Vector Brands in Morrisville. Anson won the Pebble Beach raffle, where he gets to take three of his friends to play the Pebble Beach golf links for free. Also included in the prize is two Ocean View rooms for three nights, airfare from RDU to San Francisco, and a rental car. There was a reason Biz was keen on mentioning this piece of news this week. Holt Brothers raised $86,000 as local companies vied for flag football honors. Former NFL football stars turned Raleigh businessmen Tori Holt and Terrence Holt recently held a flag football tournament on behalf of their Holt Brothers Foundation. The proceeds went to children who have parents with cancer. Several of Tori Holt's Super Bowl teammates from the St. Louis Rams, Dre Bly, Ray Agnew, Toyoka Jackson, Dante Hall, and Cliff Crosby, along with Thori Staples Bryan, Lloyd Harrison, and Jericho Cotchery, served as coaches to encourage the 16 teams and help them with running plays. The Holt Brothers Foundation raised $86,000 for the cause. Dixon Hughes Goodman was the top fundraiser, raising $12,805. Entrepreneur puts new twist on downtown tours. There's a new tour of Raleigh that is actually making fun of the City of Oaks' history. It's the Raleigh Comedy Bus Tour, courtesy of Tobacco Road Tours. During the 90-minute tour of the city, guests will hear unique slants on the Capitol's history, architecture, culture, and politics, while taking a ride around Fayetteville Street, Glenwood South, the Warehouse District, and other downtown locations. It is a comedy tour wrapped around the people, places, and events of North Carolina and Raleigh, the capital, says Tobacco Road Tours owner Brad Kennedy. There is a story about how the North Carolina public felt about George Washington being depicted as a Roman general, an LOL and OMG moment in our history. A tour costs $28 and is a BYOBB, bring your own booze bus, so pack your favorite bottle of wine or a six-pack of beer and enjoy the trip. IBM's local head plans regular trips to NCSU. Fran O'Sullivan, site leader for IBM's Research Triangle Park campus, isn't lassoed to her desk these days. O'Sullivan, who took the helm from Bob Greenberg last year, has been promoting what she calls agile workspace, where instead of opaque walls, there's glass. Instead of static desks, there are adjustable laptop stations. And she's practicing what she's preaching. O'Sullivan plans to work at least one day each month from Centennial Campus, where IBM has taken a small office. It's all about collaboration, she says. Echelon's Patel, McElveen strut their craft at kitchen opening in New York. Triangle restaurateurs Gaurav G. Patel, and Chef Tayon McElveen were among the very first to prepare a meal in the fully functioning outdoor kitchen in front of the New York Stock Exchange. U.S. Foods invited five of America's hidden culinary gems to the NYSE to spotlight local chefs. What was on the menu, Biz asked? McElveen's signature pork belly al pastor with smoky stone ground grits, guajillo chili sauce, and jicama chow chow. Balloon Fest expected to pump $5.8 million into Wake County. A 36-acre town park in Fuquay Varina that's been mostly used for soccer games and frisbee golf the last few years was transformed over the Memorial Day weekend into a festival fairground of hot air balloons. Music and fun as the southern Wake County town played host for the first time to the 2016 Freedom Balloon Fest. Early traffic estimates show the festival drew a crowd of about 28,000 people on Friday night for the mass ascension of 30 hot air balloons. The crowd rose to about 44,000 people on Saturday for the music, tether rides, and balloon glow after dark before the rains of Tropical Storm Bonnie shut things down for the outdoor festival on Sunday. Organizers using typical tourism economic indicators estimate the impact at around $5.8 million for Wake County and the surrounding area. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, hockey player Brent shifts to real estate. Brent to work from to work with founder Stroud. Recently retired pro hockey player Tim Brent will soon be coming back to Raleigh and joining the team at the NAI Carroll Atlantic Realty commercial real estate brokerage firm. NAI Carroll Atlantic chairman Steve Stroud says that Brent will be moving to Raleigh in mid-June to begin his training and studies for his real estate brokerage license and will be working directly with Stroud on many of the land and commercial property transactions he has pending across the state. Brent, a former Carolina Hurricanes team member, is also expected to make Raleigh his new home, along with his new bride, Eva Shockey Brent, the well-known Canadian game hunter, model, and Outdoor Channel television show co-host. Pulte's Del Webb buys 164 acres in Wake Forest for new active adult community. Del Webb, a brand of one of the Triangle's largest home builders, Pulte Group Incorporated, has snapped up 452 lots for a new development in Wake Forest called Del Webb at Traditions. The Del Webb brand, known for its active adult communities, has teamed up with Phoenix-based developer Suncrest Real Estate and Land to build a new neighborhood in the town of Wake Forest. The active adult community features 452 home sites and is slated for its grand opening in spring 2017. Del Webb sold out of its first active adult community in Cary, Carolina Preserve at Amberley, several years ago, and is in the middle of development at the 460-acre Carolina Arbors in East Durham. Del Webb at Traditions will be located within the master planned community of Traditions of Wake Forest on Gilcrest Road. The new 164-acre development will feature wooded walking paths, nearly 40 acres of green space, and an 18,000-square-foot amenity complex featuring a clubhouse and outdoor recreation area. It's being billed as having a variety of contemporary, consumer-inspired home designs. Housing firm finalizes buy despite project denial. The student housing firm, whose new student housing apartment project on Raleigh's Hillsborough Street was denied by city leaders, has decided to buy the prime real estate anyway. An affiliate of Landmark Properties of Athens, Georgia, paid $10.75 million for the 3.22 acre site at the corner of Hillsborough and Concord Streets, according to county real estate records. While details of Landmark's new plan for the site aren't firm yet, it is understood that the company plans to max out the project at 650 student housing beds once complete, instead of the original plan proposed in November for 775 beds, a 16% reduction. The project is slated to open in fall 2018. Bayou Cafe reopens in new Durham location. After being closed for 3 weeks, Bayou Cafe in downtown Durham reopened May 26 in its new location. The new spot is a couple of doors down from its original location, moving from 335 West Main Street to 341 West Main Street, and now more of a jazz club and restaurant rather than a coffee shop and deli as it was before. Taking its former spot is an English-style pub formed by the owners of downtown Durham's Bull McCabe's Irish Pub and the owner of the Tantrum food truck. Healthy fast food chain coming to North Hills, Cary. The developer of North Hills in Raleigh has confirmed plans to open the first Grab a Green food and juice restaurant location in the Triangle by the fall, but by the looks of the restaurant's growth plans, it won't stop there. Grab a Green, which started with a couple of corporate-owned locations in Arizona in 2013, has been rapidly opening franchise locations nationwide. Among its list of restaurant locations coming soon is the North Hills Restaurant, which will be near the Sur La Table store in the Lassiter District, as well as a location in Cary at the corner of Northwest Maynard and Chapel Hill Roads. Blue Mango at Glenwood South under new ownership, new name. Some may have noticed the replacement of Blue Mango with Indio on Glenwood Avenue. An Indian restaurant and lounge, Indio debuted with a renovated interior, improved menu, and new chef and staff. Ken Shah, who has a long history in IT and is now a wedding planner, says he plans to integrate his wedding planning, catering, and restaurant businesses. And now we turn to the On Pharmaceuticals page, written by Jason DeBruin. The main headline: How Arrivo Bagged $49 Million from Investors. Instead of pitching investors on the promise of a specific new drug, Steve Butts and Bill Wolford pitched investors on themselves. Investors, which include Jazz Pharmaceuticals, Solus BioVentures, and Rex Health Ventures, the venture firm arm of Raleigh Hospital, UNC Rex Healthcare, considered it a good investment and pumped $49 million into Arrivo BioVentures, turning Butts, Wolford, and their team loose on early-stage drug developers. Typically, in drug development financing, a group of scientists will identify a potential new drug and a specific disease to fight. In their investor pitch, Butts and Wolford told investors that they needed the money first and would find the experimental drugs next. Of course, when you've been part of three successful exits, investors tend to put more trust in you. Butts was a member of Aerial Biopharma, the Morrisville sleep drug developer that sold to Jazz in 2014 in a deal that could ultimately be worth nearly $400 million. The former Aerial compound, now called JZP-110, is in a Phase 3 clinical trial. Other successful exits involving Arrivo team members include Adrenix Pharmaceuticals, and Neuronex. Still, a drug development company raising $49 million simply on the promise that they will find good potential drugs and develop them for a shareholder return is not the industry norm. I am sure there are companies out there that have done this, so I don't think we are the first, says Butts, but I do think it's probably a pretty small club. Arrivo will look to license 4 to 6 potential drugs and develop them through the Valley of Death, compiling enough data on the experimental drug that turns the heads of a larger pharmaceutical company. Or in short, small company does research and development on a compound. Arrivo completes early-stage human trials. Big Pharma takes the compound through late-stage testing and to a new drug application with FDA. And in a section called She Said It, the quote, I could not be happier to receive the results of this important study completed by our strong partner in Japan. And that's from Prabhavathi Fernandez, Sempra president and CEO, after the company announced positive results from a clinical trial testing Sempra's experimental antibiotic, solithromycin, in Japan, the second largest antibiotic market in the world, with a market potential of over $450 million. FDA approvals with local connections. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently approved two new products that will each be manufactured in the Triangle. Sequeris, a division of Melbourne, Australia-based CS Limited, received approval for the seasonal flu vaccine Flucelvax quadrivalent, which will be manufactured in Holly Springs. CSL acquired the Holly Springs plant from Novartis in 2014 for $275 million. Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Biogen received approval for long-acting multiple sclerosis treatment Zenbrita, a drug that will be made in its Research Triangle Park facility. And in a section called Big Numbers, these seem to be related to Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina, $280 million. Losses incurred by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina on Affordable Care Act plans. $1.8 billion. Revenue by BCBSNC for all ACA plans. 5% of ACA patients accounted for 70% of all medical costs. 18.8%. Rate increase requested by BCBSNC on ACA plans for 2017. And now we turn to the On Tech and Transportation page written by Lauren Onisorge. The main headline, free thinkers at NCSU continue with their dream to build PRTs. It still sounds like exposition from a sci-fi novel, colorful cars whizzing along a skyline track, but the pair of NC State University innovators who have been trying to make personal rapid transit vehicles, or PRTs, a reality since 2013, say the system could be functional in 2017. Marshall Brain, the same NCSU professor of How Stuff Works acclaim, and associate professor Seth Holler have been working quietly in a lab off of Varsity Drive in Raleigh to prove their idea isn't just talk. "We are building the second-generation prototype as we speak," Brain said. "The prototype, at least right now, doesn't look like the design photos. It's a shiny metal frame with a flat bottom that requires some imagination to get the vision he's going for." "It will have wheels and stuff below it," Holler explains, pointing to an image of the frame. The pair hopes to spend a $300,000 North Carolina Department of Transportation grant to build on one of five cars. The team has applied for additional grants, actively seeking cash to take the system to the next level. If all goes well, the cars could move along an oval wooden test track already in place by the Hunt Library. The pair have already built one prototype they can showcase, a lightweight vehicle that they hope could operate at about a penny per mile, consuming less electricity than a Tesla. The plan is to create a car and load that would weigh about 1,000 pounds, meaning the weight requirements of the track, as well as the cost to build it, would be far less than what it takes to support a 100,000-pound train. As the weight is spread among several personal vehicles, they say they could run thousands of people along their rail line at a much lower cost than light rail. And the project, which they hope could one day brand Raleigh similarly to how the Arch brand St. Louis, goes into high gear this summer. If it meets regulatory muster, the project could have working cars moving along that prototype oval in the spring of 2017. Wingo Murphy rope in new investors for Spiffy. 2 years after Uber of car washing app Spiffy debuted in the Triangle, the management team, Channel Advisor co-founder Scott Wingo, and Carolina Auto Spa entrepreneur Carl Murphy has raised nearly $2 million for the venture. Spiffy, which Wingo and Murphy founded in 2014, has closed on $1.6 million in new debt financing from two investors. The startup, according to past interviews with the founders, turns any parking space into a car wash, even the lot in front of your office building. Users can order and pay for a car wash from their smartphones in about 2 minutes. KKR-led group offers to buy SideQuest for $509 million. A private equity firm has made a $509 million buyout offer for Morrisville software firm SideQuest. Acel KKR wants to take SideQuest private for $17.75 per share, while SideQuest's board of directors has given the official okay, the company is soliciting additional offers. The current deal gives shareholders a big premium over what their stakes were worth May 27, when shares closed at $13.22. Institutional backers own 95% of the shares, according to FactSet Research. And the top five stakeholders are Florida-based RGM Capital, 9.6% stakeholder. Massachusetts-based Fidelity Management and Research Company, 7%. Minnesota-based Riverbridge Partners, 7%. Maryland-based T. Rowe Price Associates, 6.8%. And Illinois-based Discovery Group, 6.5% stakeholder. And finally, under a section called Who's Tinging, it's official. Canadian internet company Ting, a subsidiary of publicly traded Tuckos, is bringing fiber internet to Holly Springs, and with it, a presence in the Triangle. The company is putting together a formal plan and starting to hire for its Holly Springs office. By the time customers connect, sometime by the end of the year, there could be between 5 and 10 people, including installers, working out of a local Ting facility. The rollout? Phase 1 starts in August and includes the Holly Springs neighborhoods of Holly Glen, Braxton Village, and Holly Point. Phase 2 starts in October and includes Oak Hill and Windcrest. And Phase 3 starts in November and includes 12 Oaks, Arbor Commons, and Arbor Creek. And now in this issue of the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the A Better World page written by Todd Cohen, who also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. And first we'll read his column that is headlined, Raleigh Center Offers Help to Seniors. 3 mornings a week, older adults who live in Glenwood Towers and the Carriage House Apartments near downtown Raleigh take a neighborhood walk together. And every month, roughly 1,000 families that cannot afford diapers receive a 2-week supply. Leading both efforts is St. Saviour's Center, a nonprofit that was created by the Christ Church Outreach Ministry and other members of the congregation at Christ Church and began operating in 2003. They wanted it to be an independent nonprofit and expand beyond the church and be a center for the community, says Sharon Hayes, the center's executive director. Operating with an annual budget of $250,000, one full-time employee, and several hundred volunteers, St. Saviour's Center operates 2 programs of its own, partners with other groups on 4 other programs, and is part of a network of outreach programs with direct connections to over 20 nonprofits that serve thousands of people in a year. Based in 2 buildings at 616 Tucker Street, built by Christ Church in the 1920s, St. Saviour's Center has grown rapidly since 2010 when it launched a new program and partnered with 2 others. One of those partners, Community Music School, offers private music lessons once a week after school and Saturdays for $1 per lesson to about 100 children a year from low-income families. The other, Haitian Evangelical Community Church, holds Sunday services and Tuesday night prayer meetings plus a Sunday school for children. The new program the center launched in late 2010 was the Diaper Train, which donated 60,000 diapers to about 12 agencies in 2011. That total grew to 240,000 diapers in 2012, when it expanded to include donations to individual families referred to it, and to 450,000 in 2013. In its first 4 years, Diaper Train donated 1 million diapers, a total that grew to 2 million last year. St. Saviour's Center's other program is Healthy Living for Seniors, a wellness program for older adults who live in public housing at Glenwood Towers and Carriage House Apartments. Launched in 2006, the program serves about 125 of the 400 residents of the 2 buildings. In addition to activities such as the morning walking group, which is led by Hayes, it includes classes and spiritual support at the center. The center also partners with Meals on Wheels of Wake County and with Wake Relief. Every weekday, Meals on Wheels serves lunch to 50 to 60 seniors, many of whom arrive at 9 a.m. to participate in activities at the center. And Wake Relief, an emergency food pantry that is a program of Christ Church, provides a week's worth of groceries to families that may visit every 30 days if referred by Wake County Human Services. The pantry serves 7,000 to 9,000 people per year. St. Xavier's Center aims to raise $90,000 to hire 2 part-time employees to focus on fundraising and program coordination. St. Xavier's Center needs to be set up so we can begin addressing unmet needs of the working poor, Hayes says. And in our nonprofit news section, Cary Dentist honored at DBAP. Cary Dentist Dr. Siddhi Lowry of Lowry Smiles was honored before a Durham Bulls game. She is the winner of OnDeck's local Raleigh-Durham Small Business Home Run Contest, an initiative recognizing businesses that have positively impacted their local communities. I enjoy being a small business owner in North Carolina and am determined to create a work environment that's fun, friendly, professional, and secure for my staff and my customers, she said. Local Doc receives CDC Award. Dr. Graham Barden received the 2016 Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, Childhood Immunization Champion Award for his academic research on vaccine storage and his commitment to vaccinating underserved populations. The CDC Childhood Immunization Champion Award honors individuals who are doing an exemplary job or going above and beyond to promote childhood immunizations in their communities. The CDC awards the Champion Award to one person from each state. Graham Barden is a tireless advocate for policies and practices that promote the proper handling and storage of vaccines for children, said Dr. Debbie Ainsworth, FAAP president of the North Carolina Pediatric Society. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page. And first, we read the viewpoint written by Andrew Broad, who's a senior research fellow in UNCG's Center for Business and Economic Research. The headline on his viewpoint column, Overdue Changes in Federal Overtime Regulations. Last week, the federal government issued a new rule that increases the number of workers who must be paid overtime when they work more than 40 hours per week. Salaried workers who earn more than a minimum threshold are exempt from overtime. The new rule, which will go into effect on December 1 of this year, raises the threshold. All hourly workers have overtime protections already, and that isn't changed by the new rule. For years, employers have been allowed to not pay overtime to professionals and managers, and that makes sense. The concept of overtime doesn't apply to the people at or near the top who are making the big decisions. But how far down the organizational ladder do professionals go? The salary threshold prevents employers from abusing the exemption by defining too many of their workers as professionals. The salary threshold was last changed in 2004, when it was set at $455 per week, or $23,660 annually. The new rule roughly doubles that to $47,476 per year, and it provides for increases every 3 years from now on in order to keep up with inflation. Inflation is one of the reasons for the new rule. Since 2004, prices overall have risen by 25%. But the more important goal is to restore overtime pay as a bulwark of working and middle-class incomes. The old threshold of $23,660 is about equal to the federal poverty threshold for a family of four. If not for the rule change, the only salaried workers subject to the overtime rule would be those under the poverty line. The new rule won't affect many workers. All hourly workers are unaffected, as are salaried workers earning less than $23,660 or more than $47,476. The federal government estimates that 4.2 million salaried workers fall in between those two figures and will now have overtime protection. The left-leaning Economic Policy Institute, or EPI, puts that number at 12.5 million, but not all of those employees work overtime. What effect will the new rule have? Some employers will get more out of their lower-paid salaried workers and make sure they stay under 40 hours. Some will raise salaries near the new threshold to just above it. Some will start paying overtime to the newly covered workers, and others will hire new employees. The new rule will put more money in workers' pockets, and in this respect, the new overtime rule mirrors attempts to increase the minimum wage. It, too, will be a transfer from employers to employees, and the macroeconomic effect will be more spending. At a time when our biggest economic impediment is paltry consumer spending, this will create jobs. How many jobs? Organizations as diverse as the National Retail Federation, Goldman Sachs, and EPI project a net gain of at least 120,000 jobs. That's not huge, given that U.S. payroll employment is about 144 million, but it also implies that the cost to employers will be manageable. The new rule is a statement by the Obama administration that government has a role in supporting incomes. Obviously, not everyone agrees with this, but for years, while the minimum wage and overtime salary threshold were allowed to decline in real terms, wages languished. No one believes that these rule changes will reverse that trend all by themselves, but there's a growing sense that government can't be left out of the equation. In that respect, this rule change doesn't break new ground, but rather restore something from the past. And the other letter to the editor is from Tommy Williford of Smithfield. The headline on his article, CSX Project Offers Hope for North Carolina's Poorest Towns. Selma and Four Oaks are the two poorest towns in Johnston County. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, both have median household incomes that are at or below the poverty level, and both have nearby sites that CSX has identified for a possible intermodal hub that could provide hundreds of jobs to local citizens that would pay well above the county's average wage. Other towns on the Interstate 95 corridor rank right ahead of them in median household income and poverty. In fact, the six poorest towns in Johnston County are on I-95. These towns also have the highest number of citizens on some type of government assistance. I hope the good people in or near these towns who are affected by the locating of a CSX hub will consider what the financial result will mean for them and their families. The result will be good-paying jobs with starting salaries in the $25 per hour range. There will also be additional companies moving into the area, creating more good jobs. Growth is what every community needs, otherwise it dies. Look at Eastern North Carolina today. Other than Greenville and Wilmington, most of the towns and counties have seen lower populations, lower income levels, and higher poverty. The economic impact will be tremendous for the I-95 corridor. Better schools, greater recreation facilities, and more small businesses. A lot of children who now leave Johnston County for better jobs will be able to stay here in the future. And now we read from the People on the Move page, where the spotlight is on Amy Garrigues, that's spelled G-A-R-R-I-G-U-E-S, managing partner at Hall, Render, Killian, Heath, and Lyman. Former partner at K&L Gates, LLP, Amy Garrigues has been tasked with leading and building the North Carolina efforts of the law firm of Hall, Render, Killian, Heath, and Lyman. As managing partner of its North Carolina office, Garrigues will manage Hall, Render's four-person team and lead the charge to expand the office and its reach. She and her team are based in the firm's Morrisville office. Indianapolis-based Hall Render focuses mainly on healthcare law and employs more than 200 attorneys and 179 staff members firm-wide spread across 11 U.S. offices. In Raleigh, the firm employs three attorneys and an office manager. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? I feel extremely fortunate every day to have the opportunity to do what I do, representing healthcare clients and doing so with the Hall Render team. What are some of your major goals for your new position? I would like to continue to serve our healthcare clients with the highest quality, cost-effective legal advice, to grow and build a larger team in the Triangle area, and to continue to build the firm's North Carolina, Southeastern, and national presence. Triangle area business person you most admire? Keith Merritt, a director at Grifols. Education, bachelor's degree and JD from Harvard. personal husband Grant, an orthopedic surgeon at Duke University Medical Center. Last book you've read, America's Great Hiking Trails by Karen Berger and Bart Green. And with our final minutes, we'll read as much as we can of this story headlined, What a Yatkin Sale Could Mean for Execs, Investors. And this is written by Lauren Onasorge. Executives are staying mum on rumors that Raleigh-based Yatkin Financial is exploring a sale after hiring Sandler O'Neill and partners to solicit offers. Scott Custer, CEO, said via email that he wouldn't comment on speculation. My advice is it's never good to believe all you read, he said. The Raleigh-based parent of Yatkin Bank is used to being on the other side of the acquisition table, having recently closed on its $456 million purchase of Greensboro-based Newbridge Bancorp, the 2014 purchase of Raleigh-based Vantage South for $299 million is what brought the bank to the Triangle in the first place, where it had been steadily growing a community banking empire. Today, Yatkin is $7.4 billion asset bank with 110 branches across the Carolinas. Should there be a change in control resulting from a merger, securities filings show local executives could score major payouts, including cash severance, accrued cash bonuses, and other benefits. Here's how execs would fare if a buyout pushed them out of the C-suite. Scott Custer, CEO, $1,984,175. Terry Early, CFO, $1,632,931. Edwin Shuford, Chief Credit Officer, $1,135,264. And Stephen Jones, Chief Banking Officer, $1,632,931. But altogether, insiders, and actually we'll have to stop right there as we run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.